Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.
Hey, Clayton, how's it going today?
Hey, Benny, 10 out of 10. How about you?
I'm doing pretty great. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's something new about the podcast.
No, I don't know.
You haven't noticed. We're in the moving pictures. I put you in the pictures, kid.
We're in the talkies?
We're in the talkies. Yeah, we got video behind us. And to launch that, I decided I'd come to 100 and use the space because we're starting out fresh. I want there to be an engaging background. As you saw, someone just walked by, which I love. And it kind of reminds me of the before times. And speaking of the before times, when you see today's guest, you're probably going to think, hey, here's three people that have been with the company for a long time. Chances are they're going to talk a lot about the before times. But Clayton, you got a take on this. So before I go into it too much, who's today's guest and what do we talk about?
Well, we've got Kip. And, you know, what we're talking about is the experience that Kip had coming into a company as a young person, noticing that there's something different about this place, and then just taking advantage of that and benefiting from that and just developing his career over time. And I think all the ingredients that he is talking about, even though this is maybe a conversation with some old timers, these are the same elements that create space for each of us today to move forward. So I think it's a very illuminating conversation. It's a little bit reflective, but it's also forward looking in that this is how we're all still going to move forward. So it was a beautiful chat and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you kind of alluded to something that I wanted to say. You mentioned ingredients, and to me, this is a podcast that's got a bit of a recipe in it. So I don't want to give too much of it away. I'm going to let Kip cook. Just going to let him cook. And we'll catch you on the other side of the podcast.
Sounds awesome. Hey, welcome to the podcast. We call it Unpacking Chrysalis, the Art of Being Human. This podcast is really trying to just create space to get to know some of the wonderful people that we work with. What makes them tick? What are they curious about? What gives them energy? So in each episode, we just invite a colleague to pick a topic that resonates with them, something they care about, or they think deeply about, or are energized by. It's less about polished answers and more just about authentic conversation, kind of like just sitting around in the office and having a chat with somebody and getting to know them. So today, we're chatting with Kip. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Clayton. Doing well. Always good chatting with you.
Hey, Kip, so what's the topic that we're going to cover today?
Well, we're talking about a couple different ideas earlier, and I think we landed on this intertwine of career, community, compassion, and just how that has evolved over the time here at IQ.
Sweet. Yeah, that's a beautiful set of themes to have a nice conversation around. So that's sweet. Well, let's get at it.
Let's do it.
Hey, what kind of work do you do around here?
So these days I am a dev lead. So the way I look at that is the people and process side of things. It's kind of like a companion role to the tech lead on development teams, but more focused on the individuals of the group and how do we work effectively.
Hey, do you remember in grade 3 when your teacher got you to write down what do you want to do when you grow up? How closely aligned to that note that you wrote to what you're doing today?
I've never had a clear career or anything in my mind of what I ever wanted to do. And
is that right?
Yeah. I don't know.
The fireman, the police officer, the taxi driver.
Marine biologist was always a big one.
Yes. In Saskatchewan, marine biologist in Manitoba. Yeah. Going to go down to the creek and biology the marine life.
It's because Free Willy. But anyway, sorry, Kip. Go on.
Oh, I got another story I'll tell another time about that. But I had two things on my list as a kid. At some point I said I wanted to be a hockey player because I liked hockey. That's as far as that. I didn't play hockey. I just liked it. So that was one career path. Didn't go very far. And my dad drove a semi truck for many years. And so I remember putting that down because I don't know, the truck was kind of cool. Maybe I would do that. And that's pretty much as far as career planning ever went as a kid.
It's so simplistic. I used to want to be a taxi driver because I love driving and I still love driving. So then the connection, you know, from 7-year-old mine, Clayton, is I should drive a taxi. That should be my job. And I just thought, I'm going to do that. And it's just interesting how, you know, how we conceive of things as we're kids, but then actually the world opens up to us. We go to school, we get some education, we get some experience, and all of a sudden this whole different world opens up and you realize, oh, there's a lot of different ways to make a living that I had no idea even existed. And here you are doing what you're doing now. So it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know this stuff existed when I was here at IQ. So I've been around for over 14 years now. Feel very old when I say that. And I've bounced around between a bunch of different roles in that time period. And I think with the exception of my very first role, which is just coming in as a developer, and the current role that I'm in, the role that I was moving into didn't exist. It was either created or created out of a need. It was a pitch or something that I gave. Like, none of these things existed until I started doing them. And I think, so to go back and like, to try to imagine that career path as a kid, I can't even imagine it as an IQer here. So what am I going to be doing in 5 years? I don't know. Probably hasn't been created yet.
Well, that's the truth, right? I always think of our careers here. I've worked here for, I've worked for this company since 1997. So 28 years, like, that's weird. But what's really fascinating and definitely a trend that I've noticed, a consistency that I've noticed, is that careers really become apparent in the rearview mirror. Looking out the windshield, it's like, it isn't clear what the career path is going to be. It's more about just trying to align your skills to the problems that need to be solved. And things emerge and you just kind of, like you said, you pitch, hey, there's a problem over here. Should I be doing this? Or should somebody be doing this? Do you want to do it? Sure. Yeah, I've got skills. I've got the aptitude for it. It gives me some energy, you know, and we don't use any of that language, but that's what happens. It just emerges. And then you only really see in the rearview mirror what actually happened if you pause and reflect. But through the windshield in a software company, in a dynamic industry like we're in, you don't know what's coming.
Yeah. I think that's challenging for some folks that are coming into it expecting a little bit more of a career path, what do I need to do to get to the next step? And we often just don't have that, not because we're hiding it away or we're trying to not do the work or something. We just don't know. We don't know what our priority is going to be 5 years from now. We don't know what's going to be a year or two from now.
Things evolve so quickly in our industry, but even in the world. Like, it's, things have just accelerated, and being dynamic and observant and curious and thoughtful are some really great skills for navigating a path, I think, just in current society. But anyway, hey, how did you, just to back up a little bit, how did you find us in the first place as a company? How did you come to be introduced to this place?
Sure, yeah.
14 years ago.
So I was applying for a co-op position. It was my third position. So you get three terms where you do a co-op term. The first two I did was with government. One was on the security side of things. Another one was on the web development side of things. I thought those were kind of the two career paths I was most interested in at the time. Nailed it down to web dev. And when I interviewed with IQ, it was such a different experience than interviewing with any other company, and especially what I thought the work world was going to be, just because my experience, at least in an office setting, was only government. And so it was almost confusing, I think, at the beginning, where I was like, well, how is this so different? How are this both the career that I've path that I'm pursuing here? Both are the same role, but they're in so different universes, really. And it just aligns so much more with what IQ was presenting themselves as and how they were showing up. And this was kind of early days, too. This was, we didn't have some of the, yeah, so this wasn't, we didn't have the videos on the website. Some of these things that like really got to show off what the culture was like. And I mean, culture is always evolving and forming itself. But I think it was, at least in the Winnipeg office, it was was kind of in those formation years. I think that a lot of that is what contributed to my excitement of being here, to be able to participate in that, developing and creating that culture.
Yeah. And you know, you are in Winnipeg. That Winnipeg office, just so much emerged out of that office in terms of culture. It was so fascinating because, of course, that office came to be a part of our company through an acquisition. So it's not like we hired all these people and brought them up in our culture and work their experience with us. There was just this emergent characteristic in that office that was really fascinating. And when you're talking about these videos, that's one example. But even just going into that office, it was just a great vibe. Like, there was great energy there. A lot of just things that I admire, like in work environments, like trust and respect and humility and compassion and empathy and just caring. Like, oh, you're a human being, I'm a human being. Let's take advantage of that and let's apply that to the work we're doing and the problems we're trying to solve, and let's rely on each other. I don't know. But that Winnipeg office did seem a little special. It had its own unique, special thing. Mm-hmm. Did you find that? Or how did you were in it though. That's your water. You're the fish in the water. So like, maybe you don't even recognize the superpowers that were emerging from that office.
I don't know if I recognize it as much in the time. I think it was, again, not having as much of an experience to fall back on or understand. It just felt like, okay, this is what this place is like. This is how I behave here. I can observe that from seeing people around me and emulating them and trying to fit in, but also offer what my own contribution and participation is into that culture and environment. And it was a small enough group that you could do so very easily too, right? Like, I was like 16 people or something in the office at the time. So it was very easy to know everyone and have that connection with everyone. I don't know if I really noticed the significance of it until afterwards, when we start looking at how we've grown, how I've grown because of that. And it's again, looking back in that rearview mirror and noticing how much of an impact that had.
Let me actually try to get you to make a bridge between two things. The bridge is between your experience. You're sitting down for interviews with us and just noticing something, and you described it as, that's interesting that these are even the same job. Like, this feels so different here versus here. And then I think you were one of the people in the Burger Challenge, right?
I was. Yep.
Yeah. So how does that? What's the connective tissue there? Like, how does this different environment result in one emergent hilarious thing? Oh,
sorry. I'm going to editor's note. I guess I wasn't in the Burger Challenge. I don't know where you're going with this, but there was a video that we did, like a Winnipeg video where we did eat a really big burger. There was a second video where there was a Burger Challenge. So I don't know where you're going, but.
Oh, okay. All I'm saying is think about how this company that you experience, you notice is something different. And then you're doing all this work and you're getting energized, but also you're doing things like Burger Challenge. Like most companies don't have Burger Challenge, right? Like the properties from which the Burger Challenge emerged just don't exist in most places. Like, the idea that should we do a Burger Challenge? Like, that's not something that most people would say at work. And then to get support and agreement, yeah, let's do a Burger Challenge. And then to actually do it. I think there's an interesting set of properties or something about the company or the culture within it that even allows for those ideas to emerge and then actually have them happen and the rest of the company all over North America celebrate it. And like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's an example of psychological safety in practice. And maybe that one's like, it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's all the things that lead up to that, where like all of these, it comes to these kind of crazier ideas because someone had felt safe enough to ask a question about a less crazy idea. And it gets to the point where somebody's very comfortable just spinning around in their chair and being like, hey, what if we did this? What if we did this crazy thing? What if we, whatever, did this? They're often, the excuse was the video. So we should make a new video. We should have fun about this thing. And because of that, we need some content for it. And so you just toss out some crazy ideas and you get other people involved. People see what's going on and want to be a part of it. And I think from there, like it just, it becomes this, communal kind of activity where we can just bring in people and they get to participate in this crazy thing, which then gives them the power, the autonomy to then go and bring their own crazy idea to the table.
Yeah. In their own, area. Right?
Exactly.
So yeah. Like when you talk about psychological safety, this is a pattern that I want to use the word recursive and I don't want to at the same time. It's a pattern it's a mindset that permeates the environment. Let me say that, because what's beautiful about it is that if I can observe you folks making a video like that, and I'm a new person, I realize, oh, there's evidence that there's something different about this place, and I can feel even more welcome, even more comfortable. And that might manifest not in making a video that goes on YouTube, but actually just having the confidence to share an idea in a meeting, or having the confidence to say, you know what, I actually don't understand why we're prioritizing this. Like having psychological safety to say, I don't understand why we're prioritizing this over that, is one of the most powerful moments a person can get to, because usually what we do is, oh shit, I don't understand what the boss wants, and we go back to our desk and we try to make it, and then we iterate it and we're nervous the whole time. But if we have the confidence just to say, can you clarify what actually you're talking about here, it just changes the game. Then you can go back to your desk with confidence and you have clarity and you've got peace of mind, and it gives a room for agency and autonomy to emerge, because you are clear-minded, you understand your boundaries.
And it's so much easier to do that, to bring up those concerns, those questions, those uncertainties, those fearful topics, when you just ate a 2-pound burger with someone, or you just ran through the hallways of your office wearing some crazy clothes with the entire office and with the execs or something, right? Like by creating that environment that's more comfortable and weird, I guess, where it just, you can just be the person that you are, you can see how other people are, and you build up those relationships that make those difficult conversations at least a little bit easier.
Yeah, it makes them possible. It makes you realize, oh, they want me to participate here. They want to hear how I'm thinking about things. And it's a totally different vibe.
Hey, do you remember who came up with the burger idea?
So there were... There are a couple different burger stories here. So there was one. How much are we going to go into this? How much do you care?
No. I think my point is that they were never top down decisions, because Vancouver, where I work, has a very has a culture as well. Regina has a culture. And I did work in Regina, and like, Clayton, I don't remember Scott coming to you saying like, you should start a Scotch club. You just started the club. And yeah, you know, like Vancouver did things. And so I guess what I'm getting at is that it wasn't a top down idea. It wasn't like an exec showed up and was like, you know what, Kip, I would love for you to organize someone eating a 2-pound burger and make a video of it. People had the autonomy and the psychological safety, all that stuff, though, to take those initiatives on. And I thought that was always a very interesting thing.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing, though? It isn't always, I know we're using these kind of wild examples, Scotch Club, giant burger eating, and these sorts of things. In that same vein, things like the philanthropic arm of the company emerged of that same thing. Just a simple conversation between CK and I, and all of a sudden we had a budget to give away, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars a year, and we gave away a few million dollars over a few years from that same, so we get the Burger Challenge, we get Philanthropy, we get Scotch Club, we get like just this really diverse set of things happening because different people have different levels of psychological safety.
Yeah, I always thought it was great. Felt like there was a sandbox that was built for us to play in, and if that makes sense. But it was never someone showing up telling you to do the thing. It was you had, you know, the power to do it.
I feel like what was there were the tools and the encouragement to go and create those things. And so in the case of the videos that we're doing, there was a budget that we got at some point for some of the more work focused videos where we did get some audio equipment, a couple things to help filming. Filming wasn't as easy as it is now, so we had like a whole bunch of gear and that to help put all this stuff together. And so we got some of the budget to make that a little bit more doable. And then a platform to share this stuff as well. So when we were doing some of the company trips, there was an opportunity to share some of those videos at the closing ceremonies. And so to have that encouragement to that platform to share some of this creativity, that was also encouraged. But nobody is saying this is what you should do. This is the direction you need to be headed. It was more like, that's good. We like that. Go do more.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And your people around you would support you, or they'd support you with, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right.
Or that is a good idea, right? Like the people around you, you just bounce ideas off people and they'd help you get it to a point where it is a good idea. And that's part of it too. Not just, oh, free range chickens, do whatever the hell you want. It's, there's like a support group around you. Oh, Kip, that's a little too far. Let's tone that back just 10%. But that's so valuable too.
Yeah, we would joke often of, is this funny? We'd write a line or say something and you turn around and like with full sincerity, is this funny? And we'd dissect it. But then we'd take that idea to maybe something that's more work related too. We're like, is this the right experience? Is this what we're trying to do here? And it was just like this very fluid conversation with the same kind of structure, but that structure only came out of having those more creative, like free flowing kind of ideation sessions.
Yeah. I think it's once a person recognizes that they are welcome to show up as a human being and share ideas and that other people think their ideas have some value, that's like a big unlock in the workspace. Because I think in traditional workplaces and definitely places that I've worked, it's more like, well, what is the boss going to tell me to do? And of course, my lead tells me things that we're doing, but I get to kind of decide how. And they make decisions about things that our team might do, but in my domain, I get to really deeply decide, how am I going to do this? And then I pitch. I mean, I'm pitching right now a project to a couple of people that are in my, you know, one is my lead and the other one is kind of a collaborator. And I'm pitching ideas right now and getting clarity. To what extent is this helping us achieve these goals? So I'm not just free range chickening it. I'm putting a lot of effort into it. They're trusting me, but I'm also trusting them to give me open feedback. Clayton, I don't think that makes sense. The overall narrative of this thing that you're talking about, it doesn't do this. And then that's in a low psychological safety environment, they wouldn't even say that. They just say, yeah, go ahead. That's great. You know, you just wouldn't have the confidence to push back on somebody. But in an environment like ours, it's not pushing back. It's supporting them. I want them to be successful. I'm going to share with Kip what I think of his idea because I care about Kip. I'm compassionate towards him and I want the company to be successful. So if he asked me, I owe him a thoughtful reflection. Anyway, it's just a thing that came to my mind.
I just want to say, I didn't realize that you guys had like a writer's room when you were making those videos, which I adore that idea that you're just like, punch up this script. Like, what's the turn? So we've talked a lot about how things were, but how are things now? Like, how has that evolved for you, I guess, and what all these things in the past? But now we're living in the present. So what's going on with Kip now for the community being at IQ?
Let me ask you a different question.
Oh, okay.
I want to ask a different question. There's an intermediate question that I want to ask before we can, I think, can jump there. Kip, if you were to think about what we've just been talking about, how has that affected you over time? How has that changed or affected, impacted how you think about work, how you think about yourself, what gives you energy, how you make decisions? Just how has this whole experience affected you from when you accepted this job offer 14 years ago?
Yeah, I think it is. It's made me so much more connected to others and the organization and these higher level purpose and values kind of thing. I always think, like, if I were to work at another company, I don't know if I could do it. I think I would be really, really bad at it, because there might be this expectation of, like, okay, here's your task list for the day. And I haven't done that for more than a decade now. I've had this task list that somebody else has handed me. It's been something that I've built myself around what is needed, or conversations with others, with my team, with my lead. And so I think that way of working, that way of thinking about what we need most in the organization or the team or whatever, that has been defined just by my experience working here. And it's also contributed to me bouncing around between different roles. It's whatever was needed most in the moment, made that much more fluid. I don't know if I'm answering your question here, but I think it made it feel so much less of a transactional, like, I'm going to work. And it's more of like, I'm being a part of the work, I'm being a part of this organization, this group. I don't know. It's hard to put words to it.
Feels like you said it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's profound, right? I think even the profundity of that is lost on you a little bit. I love that. It's just, you're so used to having that environment and working in an environment like that, that the amazingness of it, or the power of it, I shouldn't say amazingness, because it's not always amazing for everybody. Different personality types, different circumstances. So I want to acknowledge that. But when it works for you, like it has for you, it is quite profound. And that you just accept it as the way it is, the way you say it, kind of low-ball it, low-key it, that says a lot too about how just pervasive it is for you and how available that is for you.
I think the biggest thing that has offered me is to feel like I have a level of participation in all of these things, a level of participation in, and I think this is expanded from outside of IQ as well, like into this larger community, this Winnipeg, this more broader group of things, where when I see how something that I can do affects that smaller group, then I see myself in that community, and that expands to like this bigger piece. And so even if it's, I don't know, you could be picking up a piece of garbage on the street or something like that. And it's like, oh, this is how I'm contributing to my community right now. It's just doing this one little thing. And with such a large group, like, there's no recognition or anything that I'm ever going to, there's no feedback that I'm getting from my community by doing something like that. And I have gotten that in the smaller little ways at IQ here. And I think that's what, like, okay, well, I can just extrapolate that to these bigger things.
Exactly. This used to be such a commonly held, commonly understood thing that, just to connect two things that you described, you talk about non-transactional, and then you talk about this example of picking up a piece of trash. What we're talking about as it relates to work, our company, is that, you know, I've always felt like I'm contributing to the environment, the workplace, the company, the environment of it, in ways that benefit people that I'll never meet, but that's fine. Like, I know that when I make decisions about the way I conduct myself, if I, need, you know, if I'm creating space, like the psychological safety thing, to loop that in, I guess. So when I create psychological safety for other people, I know that there's a ripple effect that they're probably, it increases the chances that they're going to do it, even though I'll never see them doing it, but it adds to the environment. And I think that that is a really beautiful way of thinking, of recognizing that it's not just transactional. There's an environment that we all work and live in, and contributing to that in positive ways with good intentions is powerful and meaningful. And it has an effect even on people that you'll never meet.
Yeah. Can I, we can cut this if you don't want, but can I tell a little bit of a story about how you did something, Clayton, that's really impacted me, and just the story arc of that? So this was my first Mexico trip, and it was the 10,000 door parade down Fifth Avenue. So like already setting the bar extremely high for any future trips, but that was just, it's incredible. Yeah. That was my first trip. And the closing ceremonies, I remember you got up on stage, and you were telling others about just how much this company has meant to you and how it's given back. And I don't remember if you remember this, you're getting a little emotional. I'm getting a little emotional right now. And you had to turn away. You couldn't face the audience. So you faced away, but you still told the story because it was that important to get out. And you're telling about this time, I think it was maybe your mom was sick. It was a parent. And you just needed some time away. This was early days, super stressful. And you were just given not just the permission, but the encouragement to like, no, go do that. This is what you need to do right now. This is the most important thing. And I'm sitting there, there's like so many things going through my head. Always stuck with me. But little did I know, 6 months later, my mom was not doing well, and was towards the end of days with cancer. And I got a call on a very early Monday morning, like, hey, come down to the hospital right now, kind of thing. And I had this flashback of like, this is Clayton's story. Like, this is, and I felt like you had given me permission to like, well, just drop everything. This is what I need to go do. And as I was going out the door to my lead at the time, I saw him, and I just said like, hey, I got to step away. And there's lots of things like somebody can say, cause he didn't know, like he could have said like, okay, well, where are you going? When do you think you're going to be back? Remember to book the time off. I don't know, something like that. But what he said was like, let me drive you. But there was no question. Like this is obviously the most important thing that you need to go do. Dealing with that. And then, coming back, the amount of support that I had from, people in the Winnipeg office, but also people outside of the Winnipeg office, the ones that I met in Mexico, was just incredible. Like getting messages of support and checking in and seeing how I was doing for these people that, that I had only spent a week with before. And one of those, was Casey, who was saying like, hey, I run the Terry Fox run every year. Would it be okay if I put your mom, her name on a little sticker that they give you that say like, I'm running for this person. And I said, absolutely. And also I should do that. I should start running in the Terry Fox run. And so now since 2012, every year I run in the Terry Fox run, raising, I don't know how many thousands and thousands of dollars now over the time, and trying to do so in these ways that create some fun in the office. So it's setting up a lemonade stand, doing a milk and cookie fundraiser, all these fun kind of things. But all of that happened because of how you shared your experience here and how you have been given permission to focus on what's most important for you right in that moment.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And, you know, just to do a shout out to Kelly Kazakoff on that, then, that's, you know, I was sitting in Kelowna, my mom was really sick, and it was just totally disorienting. And I'm sitting there, and I, after about 3-4 days, I realized, oh, I'm supposed to be at work too. I just went to Kelowna because I got that call. Hey, you have to come here now. Okay. So I just went. I didn't even think. I just, oh God, something's going on. So I get there, spend a few days there. And after a few days, I'm like, oh man, work. And as kind of almost as I was thinking about it, definitely in the same, as I was thinking about, I should reach out and figure out what's going on. I got a voicemail from Kelly who said, hey man, I just want you to know, don't think about work. Like, this guy is one of the founders of, like, he's one of the three original people at this company. So he just phoned me and just left me a little voicemail. And he just said, hey, whatever's going on, like, do not worry about work. We are going to be fine. Take whatever time you need. And also, you're getting paid in full, so don't think about that either. So, like, he just checked all the boxes for me of allowing me just to stay in that moment, which was extraordinarily difficult and complicated. And he just set, he just gave me that peace of mind, right? That clarity. And I love that he sensed Clayton might need this. And then he actually just not only sensed it, but he took the moment to reach out and articulate clearly, hey man, we checked these boxes, you go be with your family. And that, in that moment, I was just, it's a manifestation of the promise, right? So when you were going through your interviewing process here, there's like an idea of this place, there's a kind of a promise that we talk about humans and that stuff. And in that moment, it's like, oh, concrete. That just got super clear to me that there's examples of this being true. And then I can build on that. And so then it's interesting how that ripples through, and my sharing of that experience affects you, and so on and so on and so on. It's pretty sweet. It's helping me actually connect to another one of these themes that we wanted to chat about, which is the compassionate, people-centered style of work that you are kind of known for, right? That's part of your reputation here. But what I'm also noticing then is just through that last part of the conversation is that this compassionate, people-centered opportunity that's presented here, and as you see it, as you experience it as an employee, that probably really energized you. And you recognized, oh, I can make choices here that are people-oriented. I can make career choices also that are people-oriented. And that's, I can see probably why in some ways this place gives you such energy, because that opportunity is there and that's part of who you are anyway. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And it's something that all of us can do for each other. I didn't work with you at the time, at least when you were up on stage there. I don't even know if we had a conversation. This was still pretty early days. So it's very possible that at most we cheersed at the bar or something. But still, you were able to tell a story or share something, share a behavior. Kelly was able to act in a way that impacted people that he didn't know, and for years down the road. And so I think it's something I think about often as a lead, but more so just as an acuer, as someone that's here that, like, I can do something that might impact or affect someone in a way that I have no idea, that could ripple down for so much longer than I can ever imagine. But we all can do that. We all have those choices at multiple times in the day, to be able to create that better experience for someone.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? The company purpose, create great experiences. Just how much of a head nodder that is. It's like, well, yeah, why wouldn't we want to do that? And then as we help people understand that, for who? Well, for you, for your team, for other stakeholders like your lead or other teams, clients, partners, the community we're in, like all of these things, all these stakeholders can be emergent benefactors or beneficiaries of this idea of creating great experiences. It's just so open. It allows us to decide, well, how do I make a great experience in this moment?
And I think it's easy when it's easy. And it's very difficult most of the time. If you're in, right? Like if you're in that flow, if that's just how you're behaving, if you're seeing other people act in that way, if that's how other people are treating you, it's very easy to then just default into that position and continue that with others and other interactions, whether it be client, team, internal, external, doesn't matter. But most of the time, that's just not how we're focused. I'll put myself in this example as well. Like I'm focused on the thing that I'm trying to do. I want to do this thing. I want to check this stuff off of my to-do list. I want to feel good about accomplishing something. And there's it's not naturally baked in to think about the compassionate human side of things. It can be, but at least for me, when I don't write the how do I be compassionate about replying to this email or something in my to-do list, right? Like it doesn't come inherently. And so it's something that we need to continue practicing to make sure that we're doing this behavior that, at least that I want to behave, the thing I want to put out into the world.
Why do you want to put that out in the world? Like, what effect does that have?
I think that story was such a good example of like, I don't know how I might say a particular word or a thing or act in a particular way that is going to pay dividends for someone years and years down the road.
no, that's true.
And so
that one's pretty particularly profound, but
right.
There's got to be day to day. There's got to be a way that this mindset that you have manifests in the day to day that still has these effects on people. Like when you write that email, if you just have a mindset of compassion, which says this other person isn't waking up in the morning trying to piss me off. This other person isn't waking up in the morning trying not to deliver the outcomes that I need. They're actually a human being doing the best they can with what they have, and I need to figure out a way to support them. And if the alternative end of the spectrum is I have a story in my head that this person, doesn't have the skills, or there's something bad about them, or I don't trust them, or I don't believe in them. If that's the mindset, that comes through, right? It's the mindset. It's the story in your head about where you work and where you are and who you're talking to that informs what you actually say. That's a way I think about it.
I think that's language that has really helped me is here's the story that I have of this thing in the moment right now. And by phrasing it in that way, at least for myself, it's very easy to then say, well, I'm going to create a different story then, and then create a different story and create a different story. And suddenly you have all of these different options. And so no matter how real the first story felt, there's all of these other very possible stories that could be going on. So this story that this person doesn't like me, that they're really upset, that they're disappointed in everything that I'm doing, that feels very real. It's the first one that comes up and it's like, this has to be it. But if just by playing with those different story ideas, it's like, okay, well, actually maybe they're frustrated with something else and that's just how it's coming out. Or maybe I'm just reading this differently and that's not how they intended to say it at all. Or any other multitude of different things. And it takes away or reduces the weight of that initial story that I have in my head. I don't know. It's
a really generous way to think about it, right? So your reaction is, I'm not wrong. It is possible that this person's thinking negatively about me, but what else might be true? And then as soon as you open yourself up to what else might be true, then you realize that's just as reasonable as they hate me or they want to fire me or they wish I didn't work here. Like these negative shit stories that emerge first. One of the great skills, like you're saying, is to think about, well, that might be true, but what else might be true? And it just gives you all these paths to think about. And the more often you can introduce that mindset, the more of a growth mindset you have, the more likely you are to look for opportunities as opposed to just problems and the negative side of it.
Hey, I have a funny takeaway from this conversation so far, and I don't know if Clayton's all right with me sharing this, but I will. It's a whole episode about sharing things about Clayton. No, Yesterday, Clayton and I had a 20-minute conversation about kind of exactly this. But, you know, it was about how to create psychological safety for people in the company so that they feel okay. I mean, I'll just call a spade and say it. The coherence survey that everyone does. How do you make people okay filling those out honestly, knowing, you know, like, because, look, they're not necessarily anonymous, but how do you make people feel okay? And Clayton and I had this whole conversation, and truthfully, I was being the devil's advocate, and I was like, I don't know if you ever can. And Clayton gave me this very long, thoughtful answer, and I was like, oh, that's really great, but now how do we get people to act like you? And through this conversation, I just realized it's just about modeling behavior. I mean, sure, it's Kaz modeling behavior for Clayton, who then modeled behavior for Kip. And I guess the one thing, it's like, how do you know, like you said, when you're in it, that you're doing a thing that years later it's going to have impact? And maybe the answer is you don't. So you just have to strive to always model that behavior so people around you can do that and know that they're safe. And anyway, that was what I kind of took from listening to both of you. And then I thought, like, what impact does that have on our work? And based on that conversation, I was like, oh, man, if people were just functioning more as you guys are talking right now and knowing that they can, that maybe there you could make those little improvements around the ecosystem.
I often get this thing, people think of our culture as the fun things. And this really evolved and unfortunately became part of the narrative over the years. But that was never, our culture was never about having fun. the great experiences part was we were pressed so hard as a startup and as a young company to do things that we didn't know that we could do. And the effort required to do it was so intense, and we asked so much of people around us. And we required so much collaboration and trust and respect and humility and curiosity that when you succeeded at it, it was like, holy shit, we just did that. And that was the great experience, doing things that we didn't know that we could do, but actually doing them. And that actually was where great experiences emerged from, like us articulating that as a purpose for our company. It emerged from those experiences. And unfortunately, it kind of became bastardized to, well, the trips are the great experience. The beer tap is a great experience. The buy your birthday is the great experience. The trusted vacation is the great experience. No, those are fun. Those are great. Those are really nice outcroppings or emergent factors from a company that believes in humans and knows that when you're asking tons of humans, that you also need to reward them in non-transactional ways, which is, hey, here's a suite of things that you can use to decompress, to work with your colleagues, to chat with your colleagues, to make sense of what just happened. And but also we're going to go back into that. And we're going to do things that are extremely hard. You're going to have to draw on resources that you don't know where they're going to come from. And it's us together. So to me, that's the great experiences part. Happy to be wrong. But that's, as employee number 8, that's how I saw it emerge. And that's what I loved about it. Because otherwise, it would just be panic. It'd just be like, oh my God, another impossible problem. How the hell can I do this? Well, you don't have to do it. We are going to do this. Who? Well, we don't know. That team's going to emerge. Those people, those skills, that's going to emerge in the moment, and we're going to get it done. And yeah, we have to plan. I'm not saying it's all just make it up as you go along. Although I can tell you 25 years ago, it was like, whoa, we're just kind of making it up, because there was nothing but opportunity around us, right? Like everything needed to be done. Like you couldn't make a bad decision 25 years ago because everything needed to be done. So you just, no matter what you did, it was the right thing. Of course, turns out that's not true over the medium long term, but at the time there were no bad decisions because everything needed to be done.
It's really difficult to put that into a bullet list that you're putting on a job posting or point to it when you're walking around the office or something, right? And I think that's why things like the trip or the beer tap or all these more tangible things start to float to the surface when we're talking about what is a great experience, because we can point to it. And it's something that even if you've experienced it or you haven't experienced it, like it's just, okay, I get that. That's cool. That's not, it's not something that we had at my last place or whatever it might be. But for most people, for those that really understand or have experienced what it means to have or share those values or align with that idea of creating great experience, those are just things, right? Like it's the proof isn't in the things, but more of the stories that I can tell or the experiences that I've seen or have heard from others. And as much as we can do to share those stories, create those experiences for other people, that's going to have so much more of an impact than having a second beer tap or even more trusted vacation or whatever it might be. They're nice to have because, again, those are creating the they're offering the tools and creating the environment for people to behave in the way that we would love to see people behave. It's the same. It's the equivalent of saying like, hey, you can share this video to the company at the wrap up or the closing ceremonies, or here's a couple dollars to buy a microphone. But I don't care about the money for the microphone. It's what can I do with the microphone afterwards, and how can that be the tool that brings people together?
Listen, I just want to be clear. I'm not going to argue with a second beer tap, though, if it's on the table, just in case anyone's listening.
That's right. That's a good point.
Everything you said is right, but like, hey, whoa. Yeah. Second beer tap is not the worst idea.
Yeah, that's totally true. Hey, you know, Kip, now that we've had this conversation for quite a while, and it's been really, I think, quite informative and we really unpacked some of the things about our company here and the way it is. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think we should just bring in to it? And it's okay if it's not. I just want to make sure that, like, as you've listened to yourself engage in a conversation for 45 minutes or whatever, is there something occurring to you that, oh, we should probably touch on this idea or something?
Benny mentioned briefly earlier about how does this translate to now? What's my now experience? And I think one of the biggest the challenge that I have is how do we create this culture, community, environment when we are working remotely or hybridly or however people are experiencing their job. I think about it as we've had 100 years to figure out how to work in an office, something like that, whatever it is, 50 years. We've had 5 years to figure out how to work remotely. So we're very early on. And I don't think we should beat ourselves up for not being able to figure out how to emulate all of these things. Because it's also not just a copy paste. It's not like you just do everything that you used to do, but now on a video call. But what I hope people don't do is give up pursuing what the new version of this thing might be. Like, that's going to involve experimenting and trying different things. Like, we didn't have beer taps in 1950 when offices were forming. They had scotch, but not beer taps. And so, like, it takes time for these things to evolve, but we need to try them out and experiment with different things. And you didn't ask me for this, but if I had an ask for anyone that's listening, is go and try something. Try creating and contributing to the culture, the environment in a different way. Maybe it's going to fail. Maybe it's not going to take off, but it might inspire a different idea in someone else to try something, or at the very least to be comfortable with sharing out an idea or a wild and crazy thought that they might otherwise just keep to themselves. And who knows how that's going to have an effect further on down the line.
Yeah, that's the modeling behavior. That's one of the key things. It's just model behavior, but also rely on the people around you to help you co-regulate those things, help you understand the boundaries and support you.
And if you're not comfortable leading that idea or tossing that idea out, there's also an opportunity to participate too. I think that is a missing role. Going back to, I think it was John that was talking about the video in a previous episode where there's a guy dancing on the hill, and then the one guy comes over, and then third guy, and then 3 million people come over to meet him. So you don't have to be the first person. You can be any one of those people. Every single one of those people that ran over there contributed to it, including the millionth person, right? Like, that's still contributing to this thing. So looking at what's out there, what are people trying? What can you support someone else's idea or thought on? Because maybe that's all they need, is just one person to give a thumbs up emoji to an idea in Slack. That has such a different reaction or experience for that poster than if you put an idea out there and it's just received with silence.
That's beautiful. You know, like, there's a moment of compassion there that, you know, when someone offers, when someone's trying to do something, even if you don't care about it, if you can support that they're trying something. Like, I don't care about the potluck, but I think it's neat that someone's trying a potluck, so I'm gonna attend and pay $5, so I don't have to bring anything, but I get to eat some stuff. Or I'm gonna give Kip $5 for this Terry Fox run. It's not a big thing in my life, but Kip is trying something, so I'm just gonna give him $5 and try it. It's like this act of compassion, right? So it's not about me, it's about, well, this other person's trying something, so I'm gonna support them. And that's a beautiful little switch that, you know, a person can flip in their head. Like, oh, I'm going to support this other person, even though I don't care about the thing, but I care about the thing existing. Like, the ideas, the freedom, the psychological safety to think of things and bring them up. And that I'm going to support, even though I don't care about that particular thing. So that's fascinating, Kip. Yeah.
What I was going to say, and maybe I'm going to put a nice little bow on all of this, or maybe I won't, because I just called it out.
Okay, guys, I'm about to nail the landing here. It's going to be perfect.
Where I was. I'm about to land the plane. Buckle up. It's going to happen. No, what I wanted to say, too, is because, when I did start to ask you that question midway through the podcast, it was like, hey, but I didn't want it to sound like three old-timers, because we've all been here for combined, if you put all of our years together, you know, we would be retired. I didn't want it to be three people sitting around talking about how great it was and all the things that we did. And then over the course of this conversation, what I realized was like, oh, this thing that we're doing right now is maybe an experiment in two people passing that story on of how important it is to model behavior. And I thought, oh, that is the trying the new thing. And so, look, if more people listen to this, great. But if one person listens to this and is like, oh, I learned something from Kip and Clayton, mm-hmm. then fantastic. And goddamn it, if I didn't land that plane.
What's the time zone and what's the temperature, Captain? Yeah, let me just say one thing. One thing I hope people understand is that we're not trying to recreate some old culture. We're trying to recreate the circumstances under which that culture emerged. That is actually what we're trying to do. So we're not trying to protect some oldie time culture that Clayton felt comfortable in. It's the circumstances, it's the environment. And that's why this is an ongoing modern thing. All of us, everybody in the company today, get to contribute to that environment through our day-to-day interactions with each other and the choices we make and how we support each other or not. So it's not recreating the old, it's the environment that we're trying to support, where people can come, feel welcome, be able to contribute and see the value in that, but while they're doing that, benefit themselves as well. It's a reciprocal relationship. So yeah, that's what I'd like people to understand.
Culture is absolutely living. A living thing. And I like to think of it as a human. And it's nice to go back and remember when your kid was a little kid running around and doing funny kid things, whatever kids do. But could you imagine treating that person as a kid when they're 20? Like, they're evolving so many different stages along their life, and culture is the same way. And so it's nice to go back and reminisce maybe about some of those things. But there's this evolution. And so regardless if somebody has been here for 20 years or they've been here for 2 days, they're still a part of that community, that culture, and that group, and they can contribute to that. They have the, again, it's, if you're the millionth person running into the group, you're still part of that group.
Yeah. That's right. That's beautiful. This is just to support what we were talking about. It isn't the beer tap, the trips, the philanthropy, and all those things. Those are emergent properties from a culture. The world's changed. The company's changed. There's a new environment that we're in. We want to involve the participation and help people understand that the participation is actually the way we're going to move forward. But more importantly, the things that are going to emerge from that is actually what we're really looking forward to. And it's, you know, the people listening to this, what's going to emerge from your participation in this? What are you going to enable other people to do and give them the confidence to bring their ideas to the table and then help them suss out their idea and make it better and give them an opportunity to get that going. So this is really what we're trying to do as a culture. So I hope people understand the intention of this place in that way and can trust it and can choose to participate to the extent that they're comfortable, which maybe not, either way. Anyway, enough sermoning from Clayton.
Before you disembark the plane and remove your baggage from the overhead, Kip, Clayton's got 5 questions for you. That sound good, Clayton?
Yes, Captain.
No, I'm the co-pilot.
Oh, yes, co-pilot.
No, wait, I wanted to land the plane. I would be the pilot. Okay,
go on. Yes, my captain. Okay, Kip, 5 simple questions. They're just binary answers. So books or podcasts?
Ooh, podcasts.
Music or silence?
Ooh, music most of the time. And it's funny that there's a siren in the background right now.
Irony. Planet or wing it?
I'm a planet person.
Pizza or tacos?
Pizza, I think. Tough choice, though.
That's a tough one. Oh, man. Is that 5 or is that 4?
Do one more just in case. Give me one more.
Okay. Let's do one more. This is a good one. Ice cream cone or ice cream sandwich?
I think ice cream cone, but it has to be a waffle cone. Not that, like, whatever that cardboardy other stuff is.
Okay, fancy boy with the waffle cone. Good stuff. All right. Hey, that was incredible and really enjoyable for me. I hope you had a really nice Kip. let me try that close again. Hey, that was really enjoyable for me. Great conversation. Went in places that I didn't anticipate, which is always a sign of the best version of a conversation. So thanks for coming in, Kip. Hope you had a good time. How'd that go for you?
Thanks, Clayton. That was really good. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, we need more venues to share stories and conversations.
We do. We're glad to have one here. All right. Thanks. That's it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
And we're back. All right. Hey, so before we did the jump, I was talking about how I thought there was a recipe and I wanted Kip to cook. I think I've been spending a lot of time with you, Clayton, because these are the things that come to mind now. And if I were to ask you, what is the recipe that kind of makes our culture work or grow or function? What would you say are the key ingredients to that?
Yeah, I think on the human side, you're talking about the way we treat each other each day. So if we can treat each other with compassion and empathy, but also with curiosity and humility, trust, respect, like if you can infuse those things into the conversations you're having with people every day, it totally changes the game for them. And it gives them space to step into and really believe this promise that we make about the culture here and how it's valuing human beings and how you are welcome to show up as yourself and participate. And that's actually what we want.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think what this conversation with Kip showed me was how that recipe keeps getting passed down the line. And it's about modeling behavior. And there's this really amazing part in the podcast. And I think I even call it out in it because I was just like, whoa, what a takeaway. But it's like, oh, hey, Clayton, you've modeled behavior for Kip so that he knows it's okay to do something. And then when you reflect on it, you remember it was like, oh, actually an executive modeled that behavior for you. And then there's this idea that maybe we're modeling that behavior now for other people. So, you know, now everybody's got the recipe and they can cook at home, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a critical part. Just the way we show up each day as individuals, that is modeling for others how they can show up. Again, that humility, curiosity, respect, trust, empathy, compassion, all of these things. If you just can introduce those into the way you operate each day, it will just drive you to make decisions that are rooted in valuing people, creating space for them, allowing them to step up, step in, emerge. It's quite amazing. And that story that he brought up, that bounces through the kind of the generations of our company, where one of the original three people at this company modeled behavior for me around empathy, compassion, trust, and respect. And I was able to do that inadvertently for Kip, just through storytelling at a company function. And I had no idea it affected him that way. It amazed me, actually, in that he brought that up. And it had a pretty specific effect on him. And it's nice the way that works.
Well, with that, I think that's a wrap on our first video podcast. So, Clayton, we're going to make a star out of you. If anyone has any questions, comments, or concerns, please feel free to reach out to us and let us know. And what's our goal? We want to get to 10,000?
10,000. What?
Did you land on a 10,000?
10,000. We want 10,000, Benny.
Okay. All right. We're still mulling it over, I guess. But okay. Until next time. See you in the pictures.
See ya.
Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.